Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from Edvest and You, a loan product of the NEEF Network, a local nonprofit agency providing college student loans and student loan refinancing options. Information online at nhstudentloans.org or by calling 1-855-887-5430.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Virtual events are the name of the game now, with professional conferences, arts festivals, concerts, road races, and more convening online. Organizers of these gatherings had to switch gears quickly in March when everything shut down. And while some events haven't drawn the crowds or enthusiasm they would have in person, others have seen huge success in reaching new audiences. Now, as experimentation continues, many say virtual events are here to stay. Exchange listeners, have you participated in an event this year that's moved online? How did you feel about it? And if you've been avoiding virtual gatherings, tell us about that too. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. You can use Facebook or you can give us a call at 1-800-892-6477. We're talking with Russ Grazier, CEO of Portsmouth Music and Arts Center, also Kira Morehouse, Senior Digital Marketing Specialist at Enterprise Bank, and an active member of Brookside Congregational Church in Manchester, and Miriam Carter, Executive Director with the League of New Hampshire Craftsmen. Welcome to all of you. There's a lot to talk about here. And Kira, let's start with you. Just overall, Kira, what is lost when an event goes online? And keeping it positive too, what's gained? What do you think, Kira?
Oh, thank you. Well, as far as what's lost, I know that everybody that I've been engaged with for all the volunteer work and also professional work that I do all seem to agree that there's a certain energy that you can't replace when you're in the room with somebody and you feel their presence versus being on a screen. And that's a big part of what is lost right now. We've all had to adjust to that shift in energy being shared. However, what's gained is I've seen a lot of the pages that I am an administrator for. I'm an administrator for at least four different pages, including two different church-related pages and my work page at Enterprise Bank, and also our TEDx, local TEDx Amiskig Mill Yard pages on social media. And basically, for all these pages where we've already been engaged even before the pandemic and having an active social media presence, we've really seen our reach and our accessibility through online interactions jump like at least 100% in some cases.
Wow.
I know we started a page from scratch with one of the pages, which was a New Hampshire Juneteenth celebration page, which we had to pivot and shift from planning a live event in order to just keep everybody safe. And within just a month's time, we reached over 13,000 people and an average of almost 2,000 engagements per post on a page that we started from scratch. So, and I know for the bank page that we manage, it's been about four times that amount of reach and engagement since the past 3 months of everybody being remote. So, you know, there's a lot to be gained if everybody is kind of keeping in tune with the fact that nobody can go to events as much as they used to. So you have an active audience there online to reach and tap into.
Wow, really interesting. And Kira, throughout the hour, I will look forward to hearing about your experience sort of doing it professionally, but also with the church, but also with TEDx, because there's a variety of experiences there, and maybe even some sort of cross-fertilization that the private and nonprofit sectors and the religious sector can learn from each other. But I want to ask you too, Russ, that big question, you know, what's lost when your events go online? You've had some experience with this at the Music and Arts Center. And what's gained? What do you think, Russ?
Well, from my perspective, I work with a lot of musicians and artists, And the challenge of being online takes away the ability to do things in real time with each other. So when you're talking about musical groups and musical presentations, when things are happening concurrently online and in some type of chat room, it's difficult to do things together all at the same time. So you lose that connectivity of live performance. And there have been some successful examples of live performance online, but it's a really big challenge. You do lose, as Kira said, you do lose that connection with the people that you're working with or the people who are coming to your event. But what you do gain, which has been really fascinating, is this ability to keep online events online for a period of time. So people have been thinking outside of the box, and an online event doesn't necessarily mean we all gather together from 7 to 8 p.m. on Friday night, but it could mean that there's a window of time where people can come and go and interact and have this similar experience. So that's been really amazing because it opens up the opportunity for more people to have access and participate.
Very interesting. And I wonder what you think, Russ. Kira said that the one thing that I think a lot of people feel is missing is that sort of human energy. And I would imagine, Russ, that's even greater when you're trying to create music together.
Yeah, it's terribly challenging. But we found workarounds for it and different ways to do it with professional musicians, with amateurs. We work a lot with students. And, you know, we've found that being creative, using technology, we can still do things. So we've had concerts together with multiple student ensembles where they create their performances remotely. And everyone, you know, these virtual choirs that you've seen online and virtual ensembles, our instructors have been working to put them together. And then we all gather in either a Zoom session or a WebEx session, and we'll have 50 or 100 people get online at once to share all of their music. So that's been really amazing.
Well, and Miriam, I want to turn to you with the same question, but with a slightly different twist, you know, what's lost and what's gained. You might not know yet, Miriam, right? Your big, big, big event, the League of New Hampshire Craftsmen's Annual Fair up at Sunapee, August 1st. So what are you anticipating there, Miriam?
Great question. So that event is our singular flagship event for our organization. It's what funds our organization, and it's even more importantly, it's what supports many of our members through the year. They build all year for this event. So we know that we generally have 20,000 people or more come to see us and experience the fair over 9 days. And our challenge was how do we take advantage of that following and shift them to another model? And that would be a virtual fair. Our time frame has been interesting because we actually stayed with the hope that we would be able to produce the event into May because we were working with the state. It's a major travel and tourism event. You know, all those people coming from not New Hampshire solely, but New England and beyond throughout the country. So we switched gears when we knew we really couldn't do it. And we are making it as exciting and as engaging as we possibly can considering the medium now that we're working with, live versus virtual. But we're really excited and have great expectations that we will be supported well by the people who love the organization and our members, and that the following that we already have will just advance us in people knowing about the league and our members.
Wow. So you really didn't have too much time to switch gears, Miriam, because as you said, back in May, you know, we were hoping this would be out the window or at least moderated by August. But here we are with the numbers being what they are. So you kind of haven't had that much time to plan. What are the signups like, Miriam, or your ticket sales? I think you're not selling tickets this time, right? Go ahead.
Actually, no, we're not selling tickets. We're going to hope that people donate generously to the organization itself. We thought about doing ticket sales, but we wanted to really encourage people to learn about this organization and to support us through donations. And we'll be having swag and wonderful products for sale to support the organization. We have a HOPE campaign going on currently about how to keep us moving forward and supporting our members. In general, I think what's most exciting is the engagement of our craftsmen. So our craftsmen have basically had a model where they relied on the organization primarily to promote themselves. But when we polled them and told them we are willing to do a virtual fair, but we needed their engagement, they really had to up their game. So they've had an even a bigger task is individuals creating websites in short notice if they didn't have it, or building out websites that they already had so that they could have a real presence in this event. And they all individually have great followings. So we've been doing courses on social media training and how to just message it across the field so people know what we're doing and how they can be part of it.
Wow. Well, I want to ask all of you again about this idea of casting a wider net that all of you have hinted at. And Kira, to you first, a little bit more on who's in that wider net that you have been seeing, either through your professional work at the bank or through your work with the church. Who's coming that has not come before?
Sure. Basically, I think with the online accessibility, people who are busy juggling multiple different things in their lives that want to attend events but maybe conflicted because of schedules now have the option, as Russ kind of pointed out, after the event has happened to tune in after the fact. And for us as marketing people, we can at least measure and track the exponential growth even after an event has passed as far as views and engagement with the online medium goes, which we would be missing out on if we didn't have that as an option. And I know just anecdotally from at least the church, like the traditional church side of things at Brookside, we've gained at least a couple hundred followers in just a couple months time frame, just because when you look at, you know, statistically and traditionally, a lot of people who attend church in person tend to be, you know, slightly older population. Sometimes they can't always get out and leave the house, but they might have social media. So we've been able to do the Facebook Live Sunday services. We've also been able to embed code from Facebook into our main website so that if people aren't on social media, they can still view the videos even as they're happening live. And then one other anecdote, all of these pages that I am an administrator on, I don't do it on my own. It's usually a team approach. So with the Juneteenth celebration, it's with the New Hampshire Conference, United Church of Christ, which is a state level of all the churches for United Church of Christ, a group of us with the Racial Justice Mission Group, and me and one other person in that group. The other person she's in a wheelchair. So it's funny because we were talking about how there are ongoing celebrations for Juneteenth that have been happening closer to where she lives. I'm in Manchester and she's in Exeter, and she's oftentimes not been able to go just because it's hard to get out of the house and not sure if the facility will be wheelchair accessible. So we've been able to attend these events, her and I and everybody together, without that overwhelming feeling of wondering like, oh, how will I be able to actually, you know, experience this without feeling, you know, overwhelmed of if it's accessible or not. So I think it covers a lot of bases there as far as how it casts a wider net.
And you were talking about doing a Juneteenth event, right, Kira, at the church, and obviously you couldn't do the physical event. So just describe how you, the word pivoted is being overused these days, but pivoted to create this into something that actually ended up being maybe bigger.
Sure. We definitely support all of the Juneteenth events that we had seen happening over the years, especially one through the Black Heritage Trail in Portsmouth, which I know they've been doing it every year. For us, we know that the state of New Hampshire just recognized Juneteenth as a state observed holiday. As of 2019, many of us went actually and saw it being signed into an observance by the governor. So we thought, for our church, being that our mission is kind of to raise visibility around racial justice issues, we wanted to have an event. We started talking about it late last year. We had actually started planning some of the logistics for an in-person celebration going back to January and February. But then soon we realized that this virus was going to, you know, really be something that we needed to be concerned about. So we said, why don't we just form a page that's around the topic of celebrating Juneteenth in the state of New Hampshire, which is how we came up with New Hampshire Juneteenth Celebration, so that anybody who wants to learn more about the holiday can celebrate. And we put out a call for our own submissions throughout our pastors and ministers throughout the state and also nationally to, you know, put custom content together for us addressing our audience in New Hampshire about what Juneteenth and the idea of freedom means to them. And then as we went on, we were able to share and amplify the fact that there were already other existing events. Like I mentioned, through the Black Heritage Trail, we shared some of their video content. We shared some through some of our neighbors in Massachusetts through Free Soil Art Collective did an online event. And then we were really impressed to see that Manchester, which has, as far as we know, never had an in-person Juneteenth celebration. It looked like several local groups, including YWCA and others, they scrambled and they put together an in-person, and also it was like a hybrid of in-person and virtual celebration for Juneteenth within like a very short time frame. It looked like it came together within a week's time. But we were able to kind of amplify and share all of that along with our own content so that it had the bigger goal of just raising everybody's visibility and presence around that one topic area, which ended up being a hot topic this year, probably because of, you know, the political climate. But it just so happened that we had been planning it well in advance. And just like you said, we tried to pivot and make sure that we could still meet our goals.
Well, and Russ, just from that example, you know, the net gets wider and wider. And I wonder, you too, Russ, what you've seen in terms of bigger audiences, either people who had time pressures and couldn't come to your art center, or transportation issues, like Kira's colleague who was in a wheelchair. I wonder, Russ, if you're seeing more diverse audiences coming to your art center because the content and the activities are available online. So go ahead, Russ.
Yeah, I think we are. I mean, when you talk about pivoting, we had our spring gala planned for April 3rd. So we were right at the closure time when the gala was supposed to happen. So we pivoted on March 12th, the day before the governor gave the emergency order, and decided that we were going to go online and virtual. And we still held our April 3rd event, but virtually. So we literally had 3 weeks to go from a major event that was going to happen in a hotel here in town that everyone had already purchased tickets for, to going to an online model. And what we discovered when we went to the online model, in addition to access for people who might not be able to get to the actual event, that access was expanded by our family that extends far beyond New Hampshire. So alumni of the school or parents who had moved away to different parts of the country or different parts of the world were all of a sudden able to actively participate in a virtual event when it wouldn't even been on their radar if it had only been an in-person event. So we had people from other countries, people from other parts of our country signing in and donating and participating in a virtual event for us. There's definitely an addition of diversity to the types of people who are participating in the events. We had a special event where we did a jazz lecture online, and we put it on Eventbrite. And we didn't think about the fact that Eventbrite goes out everywhere. And we had people from Seattle who had no connection with our organization sign up and actually pay to attend this lecture in real time in Zoom. And actually, one of the participants was a graduate student in Seattle and stayed on the Zoom session for about a half hour with the teacher afterwards to have a really engaging discussion. And we're making connections with people in other places in the world. And then the last thing I want to say about diversity, we have been able to hire teachers. I know this is a little off the topic of events, but because we're doing everything virtual at our school, we've hired a teacher who's living in Spain right now. We've hired an Indonesian teacher. We've hired a teacher in Chicago and teachers in Texas to do remote programming, which we never would have thought of doing before the pandemic. So the virtual arena really allows you to bring in that type of diversity that we wouldn't necessarily get right here in New Hampshire alone.
And Miriam, to you, how much do you see your potential audience, again, your event isn't until August 1st, but your potential audience growing more geographically diverse, growing more culturally diverse, Miriam?
So I was excited when I heard one of our members say he had never had a website and had to build one for this event. And he said, I'm so excited because now my relatives in Nebraska and California and Texas can now see my work and they can buy from me. And I laughed because he is a very successful artist, but had been relying on the live event. So now he's thrilled that there's a reach that he wouldn't have had otherwise, not only to his family members, but also to anyone who knows their family members, because we're going to be asking people to link again and again, let people know about, share this information that we're on the virtual event, and you can find out all about us. I think that we will have an exponential increase in our audience from this experience, more so than we would ever have with a live event. As far as craft shows, we've been, you know, we're the longest running outdoor fair, and we have a reputation for consistently having a strong audience. We have a loyal following in the state of New Hampshire, but I think we're about to develop a greater following because people are now going to learn about us across the board. As far as anyone who cares about the handmade objects, they will now have the opportunity to learn about the League of New Hampshire Craftsmen, which is one of the forerunners in the world of craft.
Well, you'll have to change your name, Miriam, to League of New Hampshire Craftsmen and other craftsmen elsewhere. That's well, great. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, we're 87 years old. This would have been we're 88 years old. This would have been our 87th annual Craftsman's Fair. So.
Wow. Hopefully your 90th, you can do it in person and online. And a little bit later, I'll definitely ask all of you about the experiences that you've had in putting your events online, how that will shape what you do in the future for sure. Because no matter what, even when we're able to gather safely in person, you know, a lot of people are saying online events too, we've learned a lot and these are here to stay. So we'll talk about that coming up. Also, we'll start taking your calls, 1-800-892-6477. We also have a couple great emails I want to share with you. exchange@nhpr.org is the email address, and we'll be back in a minute. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, we're looking at virtual events. Conferences, seminars, concerts, discussion groups, and so much more has moved online. We've been talking about what's lost and what's gained when these events convene virtually. And listeners, we'd love to hear from you. Have you been attending events online this year that you normally would have in person? What's your reaction? What do you like? What don't you like? And if you've been saying no thanks to virtual events, tell us about that too. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or call in 1-800-892-6477. And as we talk about this, I want to let Exchange listeners know that next week we are kicking off a new series of summer virtual events we're calling The Exchange Live from Home. Up first, next Tuesday night, we're going to be talking about the new normal and how to make everyday decisions in it during this ongoing pandemic. You can participate. We'd love for you to do that. It's free, but registration is required. So find out more. Go to nhpr.org/events. Again, that's next Tuesday night at 7 p.m. Our guests right now are Russ Grazier, CEO of Portsmouth Music and Arts Center, also Kira Morehouse, Senior Digital Marketing Specialist at Enterprise Bank and an active member of Brookside Congregational Church in Manchester, and Miriam Carter, Executive Director of the League of New Hampshire Craftsmen. And all of you, it's been really interesting to hear you talk about expanded audiences, you know, people from all over the country, even all over the world. But maybe to you first, Russ, what about the folks who are not digitally connected? I'm thinking about my parents, for example, or people who are connected but have, you know, poor internet service or access to not such great technology. Or, Russ, people who are tired of being online all day. You know, we've all heard about Zoom fatigue. So what are some of the challenges in terms of accessing events remotely, digitally, when people don't have good technology or they're just tired of being on technology?
Well, those are all very, you know, I'm in a situation where not only are we putting on virtual events, but all of our education programs have moved online. So we're learning a lot about equity and access in terms of doing things remotely, and what can organizations like ours and other organizations do to create better access for people who might become isolated. It's a, you know, you speak about your parents, it's a sincere concern about having older adults not being able to connect with other people. Isolation and loneliness is an epidemic in our country. And usually we think of it in terms of being locked in during the winter time in the climate where it's difficult to get around and about. But now we're looking at it during a pandemic when people are in quarantine, especially a population that's at a higher risk of having bad things happen if they contract this virus. So it's a significant issue and one that there aren't easy solutions for. What I can tell you is that the New Hampshire Charitable Foundation, the Community Development Finance Authority of New Hampshire, and the New Hampshire Center for Nonprofits are working on a NERF grant program right now that's utilizing CARES Act funds. And nonprofits like PMAC and other nonprofits throughout the state are leveraging these funds to be able to help rectify some of these situations where there's inequity or access problems, either by utilizing funds to provide hotspots in computer equipment to people in our population who otherwise get isolated and don't have access. So it's a bigger issue than just events. And, you know, when you talk about, you know, our experience putting events online and what it's been like, I don't want to paint too rosy a picture. I mean, we're all very positive about the fact that our reach is expanding and that new people are being connected. But at the same time, you know, we're in the middle of a pandemic and people's philanthropic resources are being stretched very thin. So we're all facing challenges about what people are able to do to support us. So when a gala event in a normal environment gets moved to a remote environment, often it's very difficult to meet the same expectations from a fundraising perspective. So there are problems all over the place, but we're really trying to put our best foot forward and make things work. And I think the technology today has really helped a lot.
Yeah, Kira, I'd like your thoughts on this too. You mentioned older churchgoers. And again, you're active not only with your own local church, but in the broader Congregational Church in New Hampshire. So what's the conversation there about, you know, connecting people to whether Bible study or weekly services or special events who aren't online?
Sure. You know, it's funny because I think that we've actually been pretty successful in still keeping people engaged, maybe even more so through the online medium, which might be a little bit opposite of what Russ was saying for us, at least in the church context. I know that in the beginning, people would have trouble trying to find the Facebook Live link, and we'd get messages on Sunday morning, like, where's the link? I don't understand how this works. How do I subscribe to get the notification? But what we were able to do was take that feedback. I just heard a saying recently that there is no such thing as failure, but it's more like feedback. And then what can you do with that feedback? So we were able to put together screenshots that showed like step by step how do you access, and also give the option for people to message us directly if they were having trouble even during the services on Sunday. So we were able to take that information and email it to people because we had a pretty strong email communication going out every week through our church. So people were able to access that way. And also just basically making sure if we don't hear from people to reach out. I know our interim Reverend Laura at Brookside, she's been great in that she's been calling people. If we don't hear from people, and again, we have those emails that go out every week. And also just kind of like having the different groups in mind, if it's not just the elderly, but also like parents. She's been doing a weekly, like singing a song. She plays guitar. So she does like a weekly post on Facebook with her on video singing songs to the kids. And she's actually surveyed the parents separately and said, hey, what time works for you? Is your child interested in doing this? Or we can have one-on-one time. And we have a story hour that's happening every week online this time. It's something that used to happen every year in person, but we've just had to figure out ways to keep people connected and just tune into who is there and who's missing so that we can make sure we're reaching out to people in all mediums.
And Kira, I've heard from some churches that, you know, just really super low tech, they're letting people call in and listen to the service on the phone, you know? So that might be another possibility. My dad, who again, neither my parents, they're quite elderly, and so they don't have access and are not digital. My dad's church, they started delivering him a weekly CD of the sermon. So he just listens to it on a CD player. So there you go. I want to go to our listeners because a lot of great emails have come in and I want to share this with you and get your reaction. Here's one from Katie who says, I used to get about a dozen people to a training class I run here in Durham. I shifted to Zoom back in March and got twice as many people as ever, including attendees from Argentina, Italy, and Australia. Wow, Katie. She says, it was so successful. I'm doing a second one this month. The bigger challenge is that for two decades, I've done an annual Summit on the Future of Communications Measurement, attracting high-level executives from around the world. A huge feature of that conference was the conversations and bonding that would happen at the closing lobster bake. Instead, this year, we are trying to do it virtually, but it is very difficult to get the same interaction and personal connections that you get when you are showing someone from Australia or Texas how to properly eat a lobster. That sounds entertaining, Katie. So I've been desperately trying to look for ways to recreate at least some of that New Hampshire spirit online. Katie says, I may just send them all their favorite beverage from a local New Hampshire brewery, winery, or distillery, and hope they all get on the cocktail hour scheduled for the end of the conference. Katie, great to hear from you. And Miriam, I would like to address this, and you all touched on it earlier, but definitely conferences I've attended, you know, it isn't about the sessions, right? It's about the people that you end up chatting with in the hallway, that sort of private conversation that you had with someone. You're just not going to do that on Zoom. Everybody's there and everybody's kind of looking at you. I just wonder how you replace, if at all, those nice surprise personal interactions when everything is online.
That's a great question. You know, you can do a lot of things, different models you can create for online events. You know, we could have simply put up our craftspeople's websites so that people just go buy their articles that they're selling. But we wanted to do more than that. We wanted to really create the experience of the fair in the best possible way. So we are really engaging in live demonstrations presented by our craftsmen. We're going to have on-demand video content, including craft projects for all ages, and that'll be accessible day and night. We'll be doing a virtual tour of our exhibition, which we're actually holding as a live event in our exhibition gallery at headquarters in Concord. And then we'll, of course, have musical performances that people can tap into, and everything will be recorded if they can't make it to the live event. But we really saw the importance of creating an experience that was similar, not the same, but similar to that it would be when you went to the mountain in the summer to see the annual Craftsman's Fair. I think that human contact, that content and contact is really important. And it's actually what speaks to the importance of craft, the handmade object and the person who makes it. But I think you can do a good job by engaging in a different model and talking to your audience, whether it's live or in a pre-recorded event, to tell your story and to tell you how you make the work that you do.
Here's an email from Marla who talks about the intimacy that you can get from some of the virtual events. Marla says, my favorite part of virtual events is the intimacy of glimpsing people's personal lives, homes, and surroundings, which give me a better sense of who they are. Marla says, I have attended Zoom poetry readings and PTA meetings, and especially enjoy Zoom bombs by pets, kids, and spouses. And it is fun to see the cat climb up on the desk during one of these events. Thanks, Marla, for writing in. Judith writes, in January, my daughter and I signed up to raise money for the Norris Cotton Cancer Center. We planned to participate in the Prouty bike ride, and when it was canceled, we chose a route, raised as much money as possible as we could from friends and family, and rode our 33.5 miles last week. Judith says, we made it into a covered bridge tour and took pictures of ourselves in front of the bridges we crossed. So it was fun, but Judith says, I am sure that I would have enjoyed sweating in a large group even more. I hope we'll be able to do it again next year in a larger group. So fundraising seems to work, she says, in a virtual setting, but there is no replacement for the enthusiasm of a group and supporters. And we should definitely talk about this, all of you. You know, for many of you, these events are big fundraisers. Maybe you have a dinner, people get dressed up and they come and have drinks and eat good food and they're happy to, you know, drop some money on a ticket. But Russ, you addressed this a moment ago. How do you raise money successfully from a virtual event?
Yeah, I think it's about connecting your audience with your mission at this point. And it's always been that case, but you're right. People are not going to pay $60 or $100 or $500 to go online and make their own dinner and sit and eat with other people. Whereas people traditionally will spend that type of money to dress up and go out to a nice venue and have a really incredible experience. So those experiences are being compromised or changed. We have to look at other ways to raise the money. And it really has become more and more about getting your mission and the importance of what you do and really connecting with people. So when we shifted over to our virtual gala, it really became about the stories of the organization. When we typically have our gala event, most of the time is that type of networking and enjoying, and there's live music and dancing and food. And there are little moments, these little vignettes that appear throughout the evening on movie screens where the lights go down and people tell their story for 30 seconds to 2.5 minutes. And there might be a student that performs or something like this. When we went online, we knew we couldn't do a 3-hour event. So we limited our typical 3 to 4 hour event to 45 minutes online. And it became all about the stories, videos of the people who've benefited from our programs, talking about the importance of the programs in the community. And instead of raising money through tickets, we were still able to do our auction online, but really people just gave and they came on and said, I can do this, I can do that amount of money. And what happens is you're looking now for a broader base of support because the average gift is probably going to be smaller than what you would see at an in-person event. Your hope is that there are going to be more people giving to meet your goal.
Well, those bigger audiences that all of you have talked about. And I guess on the flip side, Russ, your expenses are way less, right? I mean, putting on a gala dinner is expensive.
Yeah, those expenses definitely are less. But I think we can't forget all of the businesses in New Hampshire who suffer because these events get canceled, the hotels and the restaurants, sure, and the musicians, and finding ways to support those types of people. So we have to make sure that we recognize the ecosystem of what we do. And while there is a benefit, and every board member loves to see the ratio of expense to income go down, we have to remember that we're supporting a full economy and figure out how to bridge that gap and engage those people that were engaged in the past.
Yeah, the wait staff who make big tips at these events, they're not there. And I appreciate what you're saying about the people who set up, clean up, cook, and so forth. Kira, I'm really interested in what you have to say about this because, again, you work on virtual events in the private sector at the bank, but also in the public sector with the church. So how do you make money off of these? I mean, businesses and nonprofits, sure, need money.
Absolutely. You know, this is where the work at the bank, at Enterprise Bank, comes in to the discussion because we're based out of Lowell, Massachusetts, but we have almost 27 branches now throughout New Hampshire and Massachusetts. And with that comes the fact that being a community bank, there's usually year after year, at least 400 or more different nonprofits throughout the communities we serve that we as the bank help sponsor or even host events that are fundraisers for them. So a lot of the sponsorship ads that we normally would be asked to participate in, seems like a lot of that has scaled back. But what we are seeing is a lot of that type of energy is being shifted toward, as Russ and Miriam have said, building out online experiences where people can engage more. People are using Zoom technology to host virtual conferences. They're building out web pages where people can donate online, like an online auction. And I think what Russ said was really important about people using the stories of who's benefiting to help motivate people to give. I know New Hampshire Gives is an online campaign that has been happening year after year, even aside from this being the year of the pandemic. And I believe out of, it was probably hundreds of nonprofits that participated in that, it looked like they were having a very successful year because they had already built up kind of a framework for how that goes, where people could talk about their nonprofit and share stories and then connect with the audience members that want to help support their mission. So I know I participated and donated to several nonprofits that way this year. So I think people are finding ways to get it done,
to make the money that they need to make. They just have to shift, focus differently, and try new things, Kira. That sounds like what you're saying.
Yes. And like just making sure that you connect and leverage those online audiences by sharing your story.
Well, we will talk a lot more after a short break. We will look at what makes these online events successful, what lessons you didn't work out so well, and we'll keep taking your emails. So keep them coming in. It's exchange@nhpr.org or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-6477. More on virtual events in New Hampshire in just a moment. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, New Hampshire groups experimenting with virtual events and finding out what works and what doesn't. Listeners, let's hear from you. What's been your experience with this? Do you find yourself attending virtual events more than you thought? Or are you shying away? You've had enough of being online. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. You can comment on Facebook or you can give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And as we talk about this topic, I want to let everybody know that The Exchange is kicking off a new series of summer virtual events. We're calling it The Exchange Live from Home. Up first, next Tuesday night, we'll be talking about the new normal and how to make everyday decisions in it. We'd love for you to participate. It is free, but registration is required. So the first day again is Tuesday, July 21st at 7 p.m. And you can find out more at nhpr.org/events. Our guests for this hour are Russ Grazier, CEO of Portsmouth Music and Arts Center, also Kira Morehouse, Senior Digital Marketing Specialist at Enterprise Bank and an active member of Brookside Congregational Church in Manchester, and Miriam Carter, Executive Director of the League of New Hampshire Craftsmen. One more time, that number, 1-800-892-6477, and our email, exchange@nhpr.org. A bunch more emails coming in, all of you. Here's one from Emily, who says, I'm a new mom and classical singer, which usually is a combination that makes performing possibilities difficult. However, Emily says, this past week, I got to participate in a week-long early music program based out of New Mexico, something I never would have gotten to do live. We gave a Zoom recital yesterday evening to mark the end of the program, and I was shocked at how real the performance felt. I got the same nerves and adrenaline rush that I experience in live performance, but got to receive immediate feedback via the Zoom chat function as friends and colleagues typed out messages of support and virtual applause. Emily says, I was surprised at just how positive the online performance experiences can be. And Emily, congratulations on becoming a new mom, and I'm glad the event worked out for you. Here's another one regarding music from Roland. Roland says, I like to support local musicians by attending area coffee houses. The advantage of virtual coffee houses is not having to travel to attend them, or if the event is recorded, being able to listen to it on my own schedule. However, Roland says, those advantages are far outweighed by the drawbacks I've experienced, such as the performance being affected by poor internet connection, subpar sound or video due to the performer using their own equipment, and interruptions from other attendees not muting themselves. I long for the day when local coffee houses can be held in person again. Roland, it's great to hear from you. And Miriam, as you get ready to again host this huge event starting August 1st, the annual League of New Hampshire Craftsmen Fair, what are you looking at in terms of other organizations here in New Hampshire, around the country, in terms of what they've learned about what has made their events work and not work? You know, some of the issues that Roland mentions are important. You do your best, but people have poor connections, or people don't mute themselves. Or what are you looking at, Miriam, as you move forward with this?
The most important thing that we did prior to making a decision to go virtual was we basically watched what was happening with other arts organizations, the successes, the failures. And the first thing we noted was that websites crashed pretty easily because the organization didn't prepare for the demand. So the first thing we did was we moved our website to a new location so it could handle, we hope, what is large amounts of people tuning in. And we basically, I think, representing the organization and the event in a way that was meaningful was also really important to us. We wanted to capture the spirit of the annual Craftsman's Fair and our members. So the content became really important as well. we can do what we can do on our end to make it an enjoyable experience, an engaging experience. We don't know what to do about the folks who have troubles on their side, but I want to make sure that our website is solid and easily navigated, and that it doesn't crash during this event. So those were the preparations we took.
That's really interesting. So you had to make sure you were on a more solid technical foundation, Miriam, before you move forward, because, you know, who wants that to happen after all the planning that you've done? What else are you sort of worrying about, or let's say considering, Miriam? We'll be a little bit more positive in terms of making sure that this goes off well.
Well, I'm blessed to have incredible colleagues who worry about the digital aspects of things, and the, you know, I worry about the creative content, but I'll be honest with you. I was concerned that our members really had to switch gears. In the past, we've not been able to really motivate our members to use social media to promote themselves. They relied on us. And just this morning, I was speaking to one of my colleagues, and she said the engagement right now and the buzz that's happening on social media is incredible. We were both like shocked. Artists are boosting other artists. Artists are just messaging about their upcoming event within the context of the fair. So we were pretty excited about that. And it's something that as an organization will benefit down the road from, because people will continue this behavior, I hope, moving forward.
Very interesting. And speaking of arts and arts events, we've got an email from Meg who says, I am the founding director of the Solstice Low Residency Master of Fine Arts and Creative Writing Program at Pine Manor College down in Chestnut Hill, Massachusetts. Meg says our, quote, low residency structure means that we normally begin each semester with a 10-day on-campus event featuring creative writing workshops, craft classes, readings, panel discussions. She says, in April, we decided to go virtual with our summer residency. That meant rethinking the ways we do just about everything and providing our students, faculty, and guests who come from more than 15 different states with as many resources as possible to ensure things go smoothly as we move all of our offerings onto Zoom. Meg says, we are now on day 4 of our residency and have seen a 300% increase in the number of people auditing our craft classes remotely. So far, we've had very few glitches in our technology, and students and faculty are feeling more connected than they expected. Wow, a 300% increase in the number of people auditing the classes. Meg, thank you so much for writing. Sort of on that same vein, but in a different area of our lives, Alex writes in, we've been holding our planning board meetings over Zoom and in person. And Alex says, I've noticed for the past 2 months, we've had more community involvement than we've ever had before since the community can engage from home. Really interesting, Alex. Thank you for writing in. And Kira, what do you think?
I love that, because what we as digital marketers have known all along is that there's a rush you get when you do something online and you can measure it and see the tangible numbers and results and say something like a 300% increase in engagement. So like I said, I think people who have been kind of doing this over the years have already kind of been able to really amplify that more. And then other people are kind of having a little bit of a learning curve, but they're catching up pretty quickly. And so it all makes sense. And I know we were talking about telling our stories in order to connect with the audience. I just wanted to mention that it's really important to do like video or have photographs that accompany, so that people have that actual connection on a psychological level with what the story being told is. And video content is what seems to be working really well for people who are trying to use online content for storytelling in order to reach existing and new audiences for fundraising and getting their mission out there.
How much do you think, Kira, that you will continue to have virtual events in the future? And you can answer this either from your perspective at the bank or the church or both. How much are you going to stick with this, Kira? I'm guessing a lot.
I think the feedback that I've been hearing is people do miss the in-person piece of things. But I think it's really surprising for everybody to see how flexible we've all been able to be, and actual some things you don't miss about the way things used to be. So again, sometimes when you'd have schedule conflicts, you don't have to miss out on things, because you know if you can't attend the live online event, you can come back later and watch it. So I think that no matter what, even while we're having live events, I know that the local TED Talks, for example, have always done this, where we'd have the in-person, but we always had the videos that really are what the framework of TED Talks are, like the videos, ideas we're spreading. That's how the ideas continue to spread. So I think we'll continue to have this virtual aspect in other areas beyond just like the TED Talks, because people are really seeing the benefit of having that long-lasting presence for their events.
Interesting. Russ, how about you? What are you going to do with virtual events, even once this is all over, and who knows how long that will be, but what sort of hybrids are you going to adopt, Russ?
Well, I think this has opened a door that's not going to be closed. I think that, you know, all overnight, the entire world has gone online. And there were people who were very resistant to the idea of social media, people who were very resistant to the idea of participating in things online, that have now been put in a position where this is how we interact today. And I think it's not going to go away. So I think we learn as we go along, and we really, really try and figure out what are the things that are happening that are really good right now that we can carry into the future, and how do we get back to doing things that are best done in person. And, you know, it's really heartening to hear stories like Emily, the vocalist, who had such a wonderful experience, you know, working with the groups online, and Meg's success with going to a completely virtual event. But I do hear Roland's concerns about the challenges that happen when you're online, and how much better it is when you're in person. And one of the things about doing virtual events is that it opens up a whole new array of things that could potentially go wrong. And you don't know, like in any event, you don't know what's going to go wrong until it happens. And one thing I'll echo that others have said is that, you know, we rely on an amazing staff and group of people who have made these things possible. And I don't think, you know, any one person can make these things happen the way they have. So I do have to give kudos to all the people that work for PMAC and our staff for putting on these events, shifting and making these things happen. And we're learning together. And I think that we're going to continue to do these types of things for a long time, long beyond the pandemic.
Well, it seems like, Russ, you know, you're thinking about a hybrid. We can't wait to get back to our in-person performances, but why not also offer those online and keep some of that new digital audience?
Yeah, definitely. In fact, before the pandemic even happened, and this is still going on, we were approached by a Eagle Scout who's going for his Eagle Scout, and his project is to create access at our school by setting up a system that will allow us to stream our live events in our gallery and performance space, so that a child who's giving their first piano recital can be viewed in real time by their grandparents across the country. And so this is something that we were already looking at and is embracing it. So we're very excited about that.
Wow, that is quite a project. That's great. Miriam, what are you hoping to learn from all this? Now, again, your event hasn't happened yet, but you've done a lot of the work already. What are you hoping to learn from all this that you might apply to better times, Miriam, when you are able to host that beautiful fair on the mountain in person?
So I actually consider what we're doing now to be the silver lining in the cloud of COVID-19, that we were forced to shift in our approach. And it was actually part of our strategic plan as an organization to have more of a digital presence in the state, the country. So we just had to do it a little sooner than expected. And what I know in regards to continuing with this virtual model, I know that performance and presentations like ours were the first to shut down and will be the last to reopen, because the large crowds that we attract are a challenge. So we envision that we will always have a component of a virtual event associated with the annual Craftsman's Fair from this point on. It will benefit everyone involved. There's going to be learning. We're prepared with both emails and online, any kind of online questions that come through or phone calls that come through. We'll actually have an information booth during the 9 days that we're promoting this event. And I expect there'll be a lot of questions, but we want to do the same customer service that we would normally do in person, to guide people to our Craftsman, to talk about what people can do as an experience during this event. Even though it's not live, they can work with an artist on a project through the beauty of their monitor, right? they can experience a new craft with an online class.
Well, and Kira, last question for you. You know, we've all been to events that have been great and engaging, and our listeners have written to us about some of the events that they've liked, but there've been other events that have fallen kind of flat. I mean, what's your advice, Kira, to someone who is, you know, trying to make it work?
Sure. Don't have too much fear. Don't let fear hold you back. I mean, on one level, like I said, as a small church in Manchester, relatively small, I mean, we have like 700 followers on Facebook now, but you know, there's trial and error. If you go to our website, you'll see like where we've embedded all the historical videos since March 22nd of our online services. There have been some. We even have one, I think it is like calling it out, like these are some of the bloopers. Like sometimes you might have the phone turned the wrong way or something like that. But at the same time, people know that we're all human and we're just doing our best. And as a church, we're still getting our mission and our story out there regardless. And we get better each and every time. And then like on another level, there's, if you feel like you need help, there's resources out there. I know early on, I had seen my friend who does corporate events, Erin Newhart. She has, she had shared something from a company in Derry, New Hampshire called Studio Lab. And it was, it's a virtual space where churches or even corporate level, I think New Hampshire Bankers used them recently for their annual meeting. You can go in and they'll help you make a quality presentation where they have these big screens with backdrops and everything. So
you don't have to do it on your own. You don't have to make it up from scratch, no. Basically.
Like everybody's saying, you have a team. It's a team approach. So don't feel fear and also just seek out resources if you can't do it all on your own.
Well, Kira, it's great to talk to you. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
That's my pleasure. Kira Morehouse, a senior digital marketing specialist at Enterprise Bank and a member of Brookside Congregational Church. And Russ Grazier, it was great to talk to you, too. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
That's Russ Grazier, CEO of Portsmouth Music and Art Center. And Miriam Carter, good luck with the festival coming up, and we appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you, and I hope everyone will go to nhcrafts.org to go to the annual Craftsman's Fair online.
And we've got links to all our guests' organizations on our website, nhpr.org/exchange. You've been listening to The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.